Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So Mpumelelo Zikalala, you're all familiar with Mpumelelo Zikalala, our legal expert. He's always here on hand to talk to us about all things legal. We couldn't speak to you yesterday, Mpumelelo. Thanks again for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and so good evening to your listeners.
Well, you and I had spoken a lot about that MK Party case. Were you surprised by yesterday's ruling?
I was a bit surprised, but then I was satisfied with the reasoning which was provided by the Crown Court, with a few reservations, of course.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What were your reservations?
Now, the one of them is the procedural aspect when it comes to this whole process.
Yeah.
Now, you have a complaint which is laid against Mpumelelo, and then you have someone who's going to take a decision, not coming to Mpumelelo first before making the decision, even asking, is that the true reflection? Is there a distortion of facts based on what has been written here? Let me hear it from you. One may argue that it's neither here nor there,
mm-hmm.
depending on the interpretation. But for procedural compliance, I think that needed to be touched on by the court and needed to be acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
However, the court was very clear in terms of its reasoning.
In fact, sorry, Mpumelelo, you've always been raising this to say that, you know, procedurally, this is something that we could have given more attention to.
Definitely, because it's one of the three things in which you must look at. In fact, our constitution employs us to do so. It says for every action which is going to be taken, and it should be correct, you look at three things. It must be lawful, it must be rational, it must be procedurally fair.
Mm.
If there's any of the three which is missing, then it taints the whole decision process and the whole thing that needs to be there. The other one is then coming back to look at the recusal and the extension of the recusal test, as we now know it. Previously, the court used to say it's subjective. If the person who is the litigant thinks that the person is also ruling in your favor due to reasonable apprehension of biasness, then you give it. However, the court comes and extends it and says, let's look at the facts which have been considered, the rule of law, and even the case law which is going to be distinguished. Put more trust in the impartiality of the presiding officer and do not assume that the presiding officer is going to be biased against you. Well, it may work in certain cases, but it goes up against the principles of saying that justice must be seen to be done. However, again, out of the respect of the order, one would say, okay, the constitutional court has expressed and pronounced on this matter. That is how we're going to need to deal with it. But on the main one, I think the court was quite clear in terms of saying, we are not going to limit ourselves to what the constitution is saying now. Let's even look at the interim constitution and see how was this clause drafted.
Mm.
Previously, the intention was to ensure that you do not have people that have been convicted before coming to sit in the legislature or in the National Assembly and making laws whilst themselves have been tainted or they've been found guilty. At least there must be a cooling period, and after that cooling period, then you can come back and distinguish whether they should be there. Maybe if it was challenged, you can have a different conclusion. One of the most important conclusions being this. It is the utmost important part. It is the voter which is important here.
Mm-hmm.
If a voter is saying, I want to be represented by someone who has served a sentence, then it ought be so, because this is what the voter is looking for. So you can't dictate to the voter the type of creed and the moral upbringing or the moral ground in which you want the person to have. Let the voter decide what they want or what type of individual they want to serve in the National Assembly. However, if you do have a law that is there, which is standing, it can't be whisked away and it has to be complied with. And currently it is saying anyone who has been convicted of a sentence of more than 12 months is not eligible to stand or to form part of the National Assembly.
So obviously that duration, that time frame when you begin counting and so on was quite contentious. One of the issues that makes it contentious is how weighty the crime is, because I suppose we're all assuming you would get a particular type of a sentence depending on the kind of crime that you've committed. And his argument has always been, but I never actually got a fair trial. I got there, I never got a fair trial, I couldn't defend myself, and I found myself here. And your take on that?
On a strict analysis, well, you can argue that, but let's look at how the law actually operates.
Yeah.
and the different elements that would apply to a person who's been charged, and then they go back to the match court, for example.
Yes.
All the elements which exist within Section 35 of the Constitution are still there.
Yes.
So we are still told that this is the crime or the offense in which you've been alleged to have committed. You are still given an opportunity in order to respond to that. You are still given an opportunity to adduce evidence that says, I haven't broken this law, in fact, I have complied. You are still given an opportunity to say, I want a legal rep to be next part, to be next to me, and to make submissions on my behalf. So all the rights that appear in Section 35, essentially, or at the end of the day, are then afforded to you. However, there needs to be a mechanism which is practical, and that can be enforceable as soon as possible for our court to try and entice and punish those individuals that do not want to participate in the legal process. It would be impractical for any court to then say, if I want to find you in contempt of court proceedings, I'm going to charge you and send you back to the magistrate court. Then the question is, who is going to testify on the court's behalf? Are you then going to call the judge to the stand? Who's going to do those investigations and all those things? So it's impractical if we want to do it in the other way. The only way in which we can have it is this hybrid system, but let's make sure that the hybrid system is able to comply with the requirements of Section 35 of our Constitution. Mm.
There was also the matter of Janet Love, because the MK party was really unhappy with her. She's obviously a commissioner at the IEC who had made some comments, and they felt those comments were prejudicing Jacob Zuma. Let's just look at that ruling. It's 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, and I'm very happy for you to call in, especially if you want some clarity. I'm going to take a quick break, Mpumelelo, and when I come back, I'll try and sort out your line. And I'm going to open the lines as well. 086-00-00959. Let's see if you have any questions with regards to yesterday's Concord ruling that I suppose would be the first loss as the MK party that they faced yesterday. They've been doing quite well for some time. And this maybe was a surprise to you. Maybe was not a surprise to you. But if you were watching the address by MK leader Jacob Zuma over the weekend, he said, but who said I wanted to go to parliament in the first place? That's how he responded. And bear in mind, he said this before yesterday's Concord ruling. So that's very interesting. I'd love to hear from you. 086-00-00959. Let's hope this line holds. You are still referring to how the court ruled on Janet Love.
Mm. Well, it was saying, let's look at the reasonable apprehension of harm. Mm. And you say, and it concluded that the indirect reference by implication cannot then result in a person assuming that there'll be a reasonable apprehension of biasness against them. However, if you look at it on a factual basis, if you find a person that has been presented with a set of facts and you say to them, what is your conclusion in your adjudication processes or the system in which you are going to utilize, and you come out to a particular conclusion, when the matter goes in front of you, you on your own and without even the application being made, you are then going to say, I want to remove myself because I do not want to change this particular process. I do not want to go through the process in which I have to justify that I was independent in my thinking. Take that and also link it to what we've been talking about earlier, the opportunity to respond to those allegations before coming to a conclusion. Let's take the commissioner, I'm forgetting her
Janet Love?
The judge.
Janet Love.
No, there's another judge who recused herself, who's also a commissioner.
And yes, as part of the judges that were sitting in, but who recused herself, I forget her name is. Yeah.
Do you see how far apart and those facts are not closely linked? Because she is saying, because I ruled on a matter against the former president, a criminal matter, by the way, in a different division, different set of facts, and I could see the type of apprehension I was getting and the type of response that I was getting, I do not think that I'm going to be fit enough to sit in this particular matter. Yeah. Those two things are far apart than compared to it. But again, the Constitutional Court coming to a different conclusion to then say, no, you must be very specific with when you are looking at the reasonable apprehension of harm. It must be reasonable, it must be based on factual evidence that you can be able to prove.
If the court had found against Love, would there have been pressure for the IEC, number one, to, well, obviously not the IEC because they don't make the decision, the president makes that decision, for the president to make a decision for her to then step down as a commissioner in the IEC, number one, and also, would there have been reasonable grounds for all other decisions she's made or been a part of to be reviewed in the IE, you understand what I'm saying? And I wouldn't know how far that would have to go when you say, well, she's not credible, therefore we have to review her participation.
I would say no in both instances, because the ability of an individual to perform in any task must be looked at at an isolation level. And you must then begin to say, is this a pattern which we need to be worried about, or is it just a misjudgment in this one occasion? So I'm not going to change all the other judgments and actions that you have taken, but on this specific one, that's when we're going to punish you. And I don't think that will be punishable by saying, I'm now removing you as a commissioner when you've done 90% of a stealing job and it's just this 10% that has been tainted. So I don't think that the president would have said, I'm now removing you from being a commissioner because of what has been or what has taken place.
So obviously it's quite murky now because it is political season and these are matters that are in nature quite political, and I don't know, I haven't heard the MK party respond to the ruling yesterday. I'm quite keen to hear how they see this. Obviously one, the very important one is of recusal, which we know he's been scathing before of judges and the judicial system. So one is expecting that he's going to have something to say about that.
Definitely. And maybe it would form some casting expressions part of the election campaign. Look at what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop us from going to parliament, but you have the power of making.
And I knew so. That's why I asked them to recuse themselves.
the two-thirds majority. And if we have the two-thirds, then we'll be able to change the constitution. So I think they can be able to spin it around in their favor and try and get a bit of mileage from even the whole order which was issued yesterday, or the judgment that was issued yesterday.
And you were saying earlier, you know, there are things that you started with things you didn't agree with necessarily, but by and large you agreed with the court.
Yes, in terms of the sole intention of the section and what it was intended for, then you can be able to see that what it was intended for, it was utilized correctly. But I think that the other two things that we're missing that we're not discussing is this one. If you look at what section 84 2J dealing with what has put us here in the first place,
they
might have been a mistake from the instance, because it says the president has power to pardon or reprieve offenders and remitting any fines, not sentences, fines, penalties or forfeitures, and it goes on and then it gives the other powers which are then afforded to the president. So the problem started when you took a remission which was meant for fines, which wouldn't have caused any problems, and you are now applying it to sentences, and you are now forcing the court to then extend the definition of saying, what did we mean when we look at Section 47? When in fact you utilize this incorrect provision to achieve a certain purpose. But if you look at it from a literal sense and bring the interpretation that was there, it does not apply to sentences, it applies to fines.
So obviously this is not a political conversation, but I mean, I've always wondered what the president's reasons were by deciding on remission instead of a pardon and so on. And so all of that for me is very interesting, because partly we are here because if it was a pardon, we would have a very different conversation.
Very, very, very different. And I think, again, I do not want to impose a situation in our court in which they end up being litigants. But if there's a blatant misuse of a provision or of a power, at least in the arbiter, you must say a few things or say a few words to say, you know, even the utilization of this particular paragraph that you have utilized, Mr. President, was incorrect. However, we're here now.
Yeah.
Let's deal with it.
And but you can't, so we're also assuming it was he was wrong. Because again, we haven't heard the president express why he chose remission. Why he chose remission instead of pardon and all the other options he had at his disposal. Maybe he was advised to. I don't know. Because the court can only say that if it fully appreciates the fact that it was really a mistake. Because maybe it wasn't.
But even if it wasn't a mistake, that means that the president is now applying power that he doesn't have.
Because it's remission for a fine.
Yes, which is why the court is then forced to come back and remind us that the
by the way, this was incorrectly applied.
Yes, because you can only come and preside over the duration of the sentence. Whether someone is deemed guilty or not, that's not your powers, that's not your duty. So if you're now going to deal with the remission, and you take this word remitting, which to me, the ordinary meaning of it is means to take away, and then the effect of it is that the amount of time has now been altered. You've now reduced it. It's not like parole, because parole is really you are going to serve in another form, in another manner, and you're not going to be in prison.
Yes, but the term remains because you could still be at home serving the sentence.
Yes, but with this one, when you say remitting, you're saying I'm taking away.
Gotcha. And that's the thing, as you're saying, if I am remitting, if you were supposed to be paying the 500 Rand fine, and I'm going to, because you were, I don't know what you've done. Maybe you crossed a red robot or something, and you were fined. So I'm taking, the remission would be, look, we forget, Mpumelelo, you did that. Start again. We're cleaning the slate, right? But you're saying this is not it. This is a conviction.
Definitely.
Remitting a conviction, which obviously is not clearly stipulated here, which is why we find ourselves here.
And as the president, you do not have powers
to do that.
And yet, when the matter goes to the Constitutional Court and needs to be adjudicated, with the court having its power and having read this particular provision, I would have thought that the court would have come out and say, in each of the legal practitioners, before we even get them, just for a matter of interest, did the president have power to do the submission? Let's look at what the provision is saying. Let me hear what your arguments are going to be. If you're not prepared, you're not anticipating my question, then submit a 20-page response, as it has been done when it came to the recusal of the commissioner.
Let me ask you a very, very late question, Mpumelelo, because if that were the case, if the court actually ventured that way, it would almost insist that the president then has to review even the decision itself. And former President Jacob Zuma, even the last time said, you are making me as if I'm the one who made all these errors or decided upon my own fate. I did not. I just happened to be either the beneficiary of all the decisions that correctional services did, all the decisions that other people have made, and I'm being made to pay the price. I have nothing to do with all these decisions.
It then goes back to the principle of saying that if the mistake has been done by the government, then the citizen is not the one that should suffer. In fact, it should be for the benefit of the citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So it would mean, well, Mr. President, maybe you don't qualify or qualify, but we are going to allow you to then go to the National Assembly just for the sake of being able to protect your Section 19 rights of the Constitution, despite the mistake that has taken place. Because I can't punish you for the mistake that I have done, because you are not the initiator of the action. The action was initiated by someone else. You are simply a benefactor of such. The only instance in which I'm going to take away whatever benefit you've received, if I can still be able to recover it. So, if mistakenly there's a certain amount of money that's been deposited into your account, and you are able to recover whatever that is there, then that recovery and the taking away of that particular amount of money and bringing it back to the rightful recipient will be correct. However, in instances where, due to the operation and the passage of time, I cannot force you to do that, it cannot be then you're going to say let's send you to jail, let's punish you because of a certain amount of money that you ought to have received, and you have benefited unfairly from it. In instances where the government has made a mistake, the benefactor is usually not punished.
Well, really fascinating there to look at all of this because, as you said, you know, at the end of the day, it is one of those things he's already had to argue to say, look, you know, what the Correctional Services Commissioner did or did not do had nothing to do with me. I'm not the one who made these decisions. Would he then have recourse? Because if this was reversed or it was highlighted by the court and everybody had to start again, would he have recourse?
Not necessarily. I think even if you would have some sort of recourse, it would be too late in order to meet the deadline or the 29th of May. So even if you do try and say, I want to review the whole decision, make sure that it was taken properly. And by the way, I think there is a matter that is taken by the ATM, the Democratic Alliance on that one. But it wouldn't, the passage of time would not allow the former president then to be eligible to be part of the National Assembly after the 29th of May.
Anyway.
So I don't think they wouldn't want to pursue that process.
Wow. Bumalele Zikalala, always appreciate talking to you. Thanks very much for that.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.